Welcome to the White House virtual town hall on disability issues. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're very excited to be hosting this first White House town hall on disability issues. My name is Kareem Dale, and I'm Special Assistant to the President for Disability Policy here at the White House. I work in the Office of Public Engagement, which is Valerie Jarrett's office, handling outreach to the disability community. I also work in the Domestic Policy Council, which is Melody Barnes' office, coordinating the administration's policy on disability issues, along with my colleague, who you're going to hear from in a second. So we're going to introduce ourselves, tell you a little bit about us, and then we're going to jump into the many questions we have received online and that some of you all may email to us live here today. So thanks again for joining us, and let me turn it over to my colleague, Jeff Crowley, to introduce himself.
Thank you, Kareem. Hello, everybody. As Kareem said, I'm Jeff Crowley, and I'm the Senior Advisor on Disability Policy in the White House, Domestic Policy Council. I'm also the Director of the Office of National AIDS Policy. So in the work that Kareem and I do together, I'm our lead on health policy issues. I actually have, my background is in Medicaid and Medicare policies, which we know are big issues for people with disabilities. But we sort of coordinate the broad disability agenda together for the president.
My name is Rebecca Coakley. I am the Director of Priority Placement for Public Engagement in the Office of Presidential Personnel here at the White House. Our job is creating an administration that reflects the diversity of America, and this president operates off of an extremely wide and broad definition of diversity. So we're out there finding the best and the brightest around the country to come and serve the president.
And my name is Sarah Feuerstein. I'm Kareem Dale's assistant in the Office of Public Engagement. I help him with disability outreach.
Thank you very much, everybody. So, you know, we felt like the best approach today was to give you a brief introduction about us, but really to spend the majority of the time answering your questions and hearing from you and trying to address the issues that many of you raise. Unfortunately, we received so many questions, or I should say fortunately, because we're very happy people were engaged, we won't be able to answer all of the questions. We received somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 1,000 questions. So, we won't be able to get to all of them, but we're certainly going to try to address a broad range of issues from a broad spectrum of persons from around the country. And Sarah, who you just heard from, is going to be moderating and reading the questions, and Jeff, Becca, and I will be answering the questions. We also have the ability to accept questions live today, and you can do that by emailing us at disability@who.eop.gov. That's disability@who.eop.gov. So let me turn it over to Sarah to start with the questions.
Okay, our first question, there's actually two questions and they're related. The first one comes from Frank in Royal Oak, Michigan, who says, what is the administration's position on funding for disability-related initiatives as we move forward? It is clear that the current political position on one side stresses reductions in support for those in need. If cuts to entitlements occur, many currently underserviced individuals will suffer even more. What is the vision of the president for assisting those with disabilities? And the related question also from Carrie in Marshall, Minnesota. I've heard discussions that legislature wants to eliminate programs that help those with disabilities be independent as possible in the community, thus forcing people into group homes, nursing homes, and institutions. What are your thoughts and feelings regarding this issue?
I'll start, and Kareem, you might want to add. So, you know, it's clear that our country is facing very serious financial challenges, and the president believes we need to address them, both to come up with short-term solutions and long-term solutions. I think he believes that the way we'll get to a more stable and secure future for people with disabilities and others is if we really tackle the tough choices. And I think he's said that he's willing to put all issues on the table and address them fairly. He's also said he's looking for a balanced approach, though. So in particular with relation to the key healthcare programs, he said he's not going to allow Medicare to be fundamentally changed, so it's no longer the same program that we know today. He said he's not going to allow Medicaid to be block granted, so it can't meet its important role in serving people with disabilities and others. As you know, if you read the news, there's a lot of talk going on about the negotiations, different things that are being said. I think the president is trying, though, to again, find a balanced approach so that these programs will be stable. Since the beginning of his administration, though, we faced difficult fiscal choices, and he's proven his commitment to people with disabilities. He worked hard to enact the Affordable Care Act, which gives us a long-term solution that will really greatly expand access to insurance coverage, but also do many things along the way to make our health system work more efficiently for all Americans, but including people with disabilities. So I think he has a long-term vision, is trying to get there. But as he faces these immediate challenges around the debt ceiling and other conversations, he's really looking for a balanced approach. And he's willing to take a free and open look at all the issues on the table so that we can hopefully move forward together as all Americans. Kareem, did you want to add to that?
I think the only thing I would add is that I think what the president is talking about is there's a fundamental choice here. Both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, all want to reduce the deficit, and that's the goal. And the fundamental choice is between how we do that. And what we've seen from the Republican plan is that they want to reduce the deficit, and they want to give tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires and folks like the president who make lots of money. And the choice there is that with the president's plan, what we don't want to do is to have those tax breaks and also turn Medicaid into a dramatically underfunded block grant. And that's the choice. And the president wants to find a good, balanced approach where everybody has to sacrifice a lot, but we're not going to do that on the backs of people with disabilities while tax breaks are going to millionaires and billionaires and corporate jet owners. Thank you very much for those questions. Sarah?
Okay. Our next question comes from David in Crowley, Texas. He wants to know, what are we, the United States, doing to slow down the rate of autism in America?
Sure, I'll start. You know, so autism is a condition that really exists on a spectrum. So there's a broad diversity of severity and the way it affects individuals. You know, a couple decades ago, it was considered a very rare condition, but our latest data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is about one in every 110 children are on the autism spectrum. So it's a growing problem. So there's a number of things that we're trying to do. A big focus across the federal government is really to diagnose children earlier. So I think some studies have suggested the mean age of diagnosis is around 4 years old, but the goal is to really diagnose as soon as possible, maybe around 14 months of age. We really should be able to get a target so we're identifying people. CDC and HRSA are doing work together, again, to educate providers and community members to help us achieve that goal. The Rehabilitation Services Administration at the Department of Education and SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, that's in HHS, has developed a supported employment toolkit to better support people with autism who are seeking employment. And then, not lastly, but another big program I want to mention is Medicaid. You know, it is the cornerstone for our healthcare safety net for people with disabilities, and there's a number of ways that state Medicaid programs provide services to children and adults with disabilities. This is a program where many states, in fact, the vast majority, have waivers where they expand Medicaid to cover people with developmental disabilities, including autism. So again, I think our government's response is to recognize that autism seems to have increased. Certainly our knowledge of it's increased. We want to diagnose people earlier, and then we need to look for multiple responses to meet the needs of individuals and families with autism.
And I add two things to that. The first is, as an administration, as the White House, we've done a lot to try to bring stakeholders together, researchers, people in the education field and the employment field, to talk about these issues. And just this past April, in celebration or in observance of World Autism Awareness Month, we brought in about 100 research professionals, scientists, people in the employment field, education, to meet with senior folks in the administration. We had Deputy Secretary of Labor, we had the Deputy Secretary of the Department of Education, the Secretary of HHS, Kathleen Sebelius, all participated in this event that went part of the day, about half of the day. And we had breakout sessions and remarks. And so that was an effort to bring together and make sure we are exchanging ideas and talking about how the government can do better on these issues and how the community itself can continue to work together. And the only other thing I would say is that in that event, we certainly announced and we've made public that the president supports the reauthorization of the Combating Autism Act. And I know that there's different pieces of legislation out there and different views and different ideas about that. And we're working with Congress and we're working with the Department of Health and Human Services to come up with the right solution for everybody. But the bottom line is that overall, we want the act to be reauthorized, and we want to work towards that goal to continue to improve the research and also community supports for those on the autism spectrum.
Okay. Sure. Our next question comes from Jay in Ohio. Why must disabled people live by rules concocted by non-disabled people who lack clue about our needs?
Thank you for the question, Jay. And it's a good question. And it's that old the old saying that you hear in the disability community, nothing about us without us. And when I saw this question, I thought, well, this is a really good question to emphasize the Obama administration's perspective on the way the president believes that we should make sure that it is a reflection of the entire community. And so here in the White House, I have a disability, I'm blind, and Becca also lives with a disability, and we have many people with disabilities across the federal government that are working on these issues. We have Deputy Director of the Office of Personnel Management, Chris Griffin. We have Assistant Secretary Kathleen Martinez at the Department of Labor, who have disabilities, and many others. And so that combination of people with disabilities and also people without disabilities, making sure that we are working together and having diverse perspectives. You know, Jeff is my colleague and Becca's colleague, and we work well together, and Jeff has been working on disability issues for many years and cares about those issues just like everybody else. And so we want to make sure that people with disabilities are there when the decisions are being made. And that's the case in the Obama administration. I don't know, Becca, if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, you know, just as the disability community's mantra is nothing about us without us, I think, you know, our president really believes that people are policy. It really does matter who's at the table. And having the right people at the right tables at the right times when those decisions are made is critical for all of the American people. And I can honestly say that there isn't a piece of public policy or a public policy area within the administration that isn't being impacted by the voices of people with disabilities in this administration.
Yeah. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Tiffany in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. She says, I am a small business owner and I'm very interested in hiring a person with a disability. Are there programs available to assist in small business in successfully hiring potential employees with disabilities?
Yes, there are tons of programs. And there are lots of programs, there are lots of avenues where you can find qualified people with disabilities. And I'll name a few, and Jeff and Becca may want to add anything from their perspective. But couple of programs that I'll start with, obviously the Vocational Rehabilitation Services, Voc Rehab, and your state it may be called the State Department of Rehabilitation Services. They are responsible for their clients or people with significant and people with the most significant disabilities and helping them find job opportunities. So you can connect with your local Department of Rehabilitation Services and say, hey, I want to find qualified people with disabilities to hire. You can work through the WRP, the Workforce Recruitment Program, and look for candidates with disabilities. There are organizations out there that are doing good work on trying to hire young people with disabilities, whether it's college students with disabilities or young professionals with disabilities. There's also the Office of Disability Employment Policy, which also works to connect people with disabilities throughout the country to good jobs. And you can go on the Department of Labor's website and look at the Office of Disability Employment Policy's website and look for qualified candidates with disabilities. So those are just a few, but there are many more. You know, in this day and age where you have Google, if you just Google, hey, hire people with disabilities, you'll find different companies that do it. You'll find all types of services for finding qualified candidates. And we certainly thank you for the question, because hiring people with disabilities is certainly a focus of this president and administration. Now, Becca, Jeff, you want to add anything?
I think you got it.
No, I think you covered it.
Okay, our next question comes from Richard in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He says, given the continuing unemployment rates, what can the federal government do to help ensure individuals with disabilities are not the last group to have their employment prospects improved as the economy slowly recovers?
Well, I'll add some, but Becca, you want to start with what we're doing in terms of political appointments on that, and then maybe I can add just broad spectrum?
Definitely, definitely. You know, as I said earlier, people are policy. It really matters who's at the table. But we can't put people at the table if we don't have people in our system to find and place in political appointments throughout the Obama administration. So I continue to strongly encourage candidates or interested people to go to the whitehouse.gov homepage and click on apply for a job. It's kind of hard to see, it's at the bottom of the page and it's in gray typeface on a white background. But it is there, and apply. And we use that database on a daily basis. There are over 200,000 resumes in there, and I must use that at least 10 to 15 times a day as I pull together candidates for jobs in the administration. One of the other things that I would really strongly encourage you to do is, you know, focus your resume on skill sets. I think for any job, let alone, you know, working within the federal government, we have a number of people with disabilities that are very passionate about working on disability issues. You know, that's wonderful. And we need people that are advocates, but we also need scientists. We need managers. We need engineers. You know, those of you who feel that to be a political appointee with a disability, you need to have a background in advocacy and activism, we need scientists just as bad, if not more so. We need doctors. You know, we have over 300 boards and commissions that are presidentially appointed. And these are great ways to participate in the work of the federal government and the work of this administration without leaving the comfort of your home, you know, except for maybe three or four times a year, and being able to participate in conference calls and the like. These are huge opportunities. So I would tell you, you know, definitely make sure we have your resume on whitehouse.gov. I would also encourage you, we have an email box that I'll give out right now, actually, for those interested in getting your resume directly to me. And I would ask that you put White House Town Hall in the subject line. That email address is Presidential Personnel Office, PresidentialPersonnel, PersonnelOffice, at who.eop.gov. And it'll get us your resume.
It's a long email. Yeah. That's Rebecca. well, thanks for that. The other thing that I would say in terms of, obviously, Becca deals with the political appointments, and then there's a vast array of career positions within the federal government, as well as in then you deal with positions in the private sector. Let me first talk about the federal government career. In 2009, for the first time in history, the Department of Labor began calculating the monthly unemployment rate for people with disabilities. And that's obviously critical. The first thing, in order to help improve employment for people with disabilities, we have to be on the map, and we have to be counted, and we have to be there, you know, and being knowing what's going on in the community. And so that was the first huge step in 2009 after the president took office. And then, so from that, we begin to work on and look at policies that can help improve employment with disabilities. And I think the biggest, one of the biggest policies that we've done in the employment arena in the federal government for people with disabilities is the president signing the executive order last year to hire 100,000 persons within 5 years and really make the federal government a model employer for people with disabilities. And listen, they're challenging economic times, and it's difficult times for hiring overall. It's a difficult time for the economy. But what we've said is that if we're going to be doing hiring, people with disabilities must be a part of that. And so we've worked very hard with the Office of Personnel Management, the Department of Labor, and all of our federal agencies to develop the plans that will help us reach these goals. And the agencies have submitted those plans and working very hard with a number of different resources. Some of the ones I mentioned earlier, Voc Rehab, WRP, and other programs that we work in the federal government to increase the hiring of people with disabilities. And so in the federal sector, we're trying to lead the way and trying to make the federal government a model employer. And we hope to continue to work on that in the years to come and to improve the hiring and the overall focus of the administration in each and every agency. This is not an easy problem. If it was easy, it would have been fixed a long time ago. And so, but we're going to continue to work on it and work very hard on it. We have a team of dedicated folks who are working on it on a daily basis. The other thing is obviously in the private sector. And I think we're doing a number of things, but I think the biggest thing is that the president is trying to lead by example. With signing that executive order, it obviously received a lot of coverage in the private sector, and we're talking to private sector entities. Our Office of Disability Employment Policy, for example, and Secretary Solis and the Department of Labor have gone out and they've had what they call sector events. And so they've done an event in the healthcare sector, they've done an event in the entertainment / media sector, and they have another event coming up in the financial sector in the next month or so, where they are bringing together individuals and leaders in these different sectors. Secretary Solis is there. I'm there, Assistant Secretary Kathleen Martinez is there, talking about employment in these sectors and how they can increase employment. And it brings together maybe 100 to 200 persons who are leaders in employment in that sector. And so we're trying to talk about how can we improve that and increase the numbers, because hiring is the ultimate goal. And as Secretary Salee says, good jobs for everyone is the goal. So those are some of the things that we're doing. I think we're doing a lot more. But those are some of the major initiatives that we have going related to employment. And I think if we get some other questions, we'll expand on some of the other things that we're doing.
Okay. The next question is from Thomas in Cincinnati, Ohio. What is the Obama administration doing to ensure adequate enforcement of Title III of the ADA, requiring that places of public accommodation are made accessible to the disabled?
We're doing a couple of things related to accessibility of different locations and different facilities. I'll talk about a couple of things and over various titles of the ADA. And the first thing I want to talk about, because the Department of Justice is doing such a good job, is Project Civic Access, which deals with obviously looking at cities and towns across the country and making sure that they are accessible, that the public facilities in cities and towns across the country, the local and state government facilities are accessible. And the Department of Justice has worked very hard, and they've announced a number of different settlements with cities and states throughout the country since we took office, where the cities and states are going to make sure that their public facilities are accessible, and that people with disabilities have the right and the ability to use the parks, to use the city buildings, and to use the other local facilities that are open to the public. And so that's one big initiative. And I think on a broader sense, the Department of Justice has continued to be aggressive to make sure that where we see discrimination and where we see people with disabilities not having access, whether it be in the educational facility, where the department has announced a number of different settlements, where folks on the autism spectrum or with other developmental disabilities weren't allowed the proper accommodations, the Department of Justice has gone after those and obtained settlements. Or whether it be in housing, where the Department of Justice, sometimes by itself and sometimes in conjunction with Housing and Urban Development, has gone after fair housing settlements to make sure that people with disabilities have access to apartment complexes or other housing facilities that are open to the public, and have announced a number of different settlements. And I would encourage everybody to check out the websites of the agencies that we mentioned here today. Department of Justice website, they have a very comprehensive list of the things that they have done and press releases and things of that nature. So you want to check those out. And the Department of Justice, Civil Rights Division over there, has really been a jewel of the administration in doing a fantastic job in looking at these issues. Anything?
Yeah, I would just add, so last summer was the 20th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that was an important milestone. But at that point in time, the Department of Justice also updated its rules for the ADA. And you know, over time, there's been technological changes in the construction industry, or just new understanding. So they revised their rules to reflect current reality that, again, represent in many cases a step forward as far as expanding accessibility of public facilities.
Yeah, it's a great point. Those rules impact, I think it was over 8 million businesses and lots of businesses and facilities around the country. And there were new rules in that for sporting facilities and other entities that had not been covered before. And I think the rules hadn't been updated since 1991 after the original ADA was passed. And they did a really fantastic job. And the president announced that at the, as Jeff said, at the 20th anniversary of the ADA.
Okay, why don't we take one from online? We've gotten a lot of questions, so here's one from Sentient. Any chance of getting a person with a disability in the cabinet? There are a lot of us who are educated, passionate, and good people willing to serve our country. I think it would send a positive message to all countries, including our own.
We actually do have a member of our cabinet as a person with a disability. The Secretary of the Veterans Administration, Secretary Shinseki, is a person with a disability. We also have, as Kareem mentioned, Deputy Director of the Office of Personnel Management, Christine Griffin, and a number of other high-ranking officials in the administration. You know, I think anything is possible. I don't see why we don't have multiple members in the cabinet. You know, I think I encourage everyone who is interested in being part of this administration to submit your resume to that email address I mentioned earlier. Make sure we get it. We will follow up with you. We also have the first or one of the first Supreme Court justices with a disability as well, Justice Sotomayor. So, you know, we are making huge gains as a community. And I would just say, as a community, we really do have the responsibility of maintaining a level of high expectations. Mm-hmm. And anything is possible. You know, I'm waiting to see the first openly person with a disability as president. You know, it can happen.
Are you saying you're going to run for that?
I'm not making my official announcement.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
Thought you would.
Yeah, that's exploratory committee.
I'm on your exploratory committee.
All right. Our next question comes from April in Middletown, Connecticut. When will the USA fully ratify the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities? Our leaders have spoken with disabilities, and it is time elected officials recognize the civil rights of such a large minority.
Thank you for the question, April. And the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities has obviously been very important to this president. Back from the campaign, when he said that he would sign it if he became president. And 6 months into the administration, when the president took office. And, you know, frankly, just to be frank, not much work had been done in terms of the agencies that needed to review the document and sign off on it and do all the legal things that you need to do to sign a convention. And so we put together an interagency group of some 20 to 30 agencies, and we met on a regular basis and really tasked those agencies with saying this was a priority for the president and we needed to get this done. And so 6 months after we got here, on the 19th anniversary of the ADA, the president announced that the United Nations would sign the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And he did so. The president directed Ambassador Susan Rice to do so in July of 2009. And we became a signatory to this important disabilities convention. And since that time, we have been working extremely hard. The president remains committed to sending the convention to the Senate. And we've been working with the Department of State, Department of Justice, and many other agencies to put together a comprehensive ratification package so that the Secretary of State, Secretary Clinton, can submit it to the President, and the President can submit that to the Senate and urge swift ratification once it is submitted to the Senate. So that process is ongoing. And again, the President remains committed to submitting that document to the Senate. We are going to be submitting it to the Senate, this Congress, and we are working very hard to get that package together. We know it's an important convention. We know that it's an important convention for people with disabilities and veterans who live abroad. And we know it's an important convention for business purposes, for American businesses who are abroad, and people with disabilities who have businesses here in the States and do business abroad. And so we remain committed to that convention. So thank you for the question.
Okay, our next question comes from Randy in Arlington, Virginia. My mom is disabled and on SSDI, food stamps, Medicare, and Medicaid. I'm concerned about how debt negotiations in D.C. will impact her and poor disabled people like her. I fear the impact cuts to Social Security, food stamps, and health care will have on her ability to live and eat. What is the White House doing to prevent my mom from falling further into poverty as a result of debt reduction?
So I'll start, and Kareem might want to add. So, you know, as we've said earlier, the country is facing difficult economic challenges, and we have to deal with them. And the president's engaged in a dialogue with the Congress, and he believes that we must come up with a broad solution that will solve this problem in the short term and in the long term. There's been a lot reported in the press, though, about what's happening. Nothing is decided yet. So we shouldn't presume that major cuts are on their way or what that's going to mean. The president said he's willing to look at any issue and fairly assess those, but he really is looking for a balanced approach so we don't just shove all these cuts to low-income people, to people with disabilities, to people that depend on these programs. He's really trying to make them stable and secure over the long term. In the short term, though, recognizing we've had these challenges, we've provided temporary assistance to people receiving Social Security benefits, including people on with people with disabilities that received a one-time check of $250 and taken other steps to, again, help people weather this current crisis.
Let me talk to you a little bit about some of the events we've been doing over the last couple of weeks. Jeff and I've organized several different events over the last couple of weeks here at the White House, and I hope people have seen some of the things, but many of you may not have seen it. And so I'll tell you about them, and hopefully you can go take a look at them on the website. This issue with Medicaid, and you know, you see a lot about Medicare, obviously, but the issue with Medicaid has become a little bit more public recently. And again, what the president has said is that he simply opposes turning Medicaid into a dramatically underfunded block grant so that tax cuts can be given to millionaires and billionaires and corporate jet owners. And I think that to illustrate that Medicaid is a program that is helping families all over the country, we wanted to illustrate that Medicaid is important not only for helping children with disabilities become healthy, productive, active members of society who can be integrated into their classrooms, their parks, and across the country. But what we wanted to show is that Medicaid and helping children with disabilities become independent and become productive members, it's also helping their parents who can go out and get jobs because of the assistance that Medicaid provides, whether it's getting a personal care attendant or other services, so that their parents can go out and get productive paying jobs and be taxpaying members of society and not themselves have to go on public assistance. And we brought in, we worked with six different organizations to bring in stories from around the country. And we had people from Texas, and we had folks from Michigan, and we had folks from just several different states across the country. We did, I think, six events in total. And we had about 2 to 3 stories in each event. And we had senior folks from the administration participate in each one of these events. Valerie Jarrett participated in an event. And you all can be the first to know. You should go check out right now on whitehouse.gov. Valerie Jarrett just released a blog about a few of the events this week. So you should go check out Valerie Jarrett's blog, which should be up on the White House website. And so you're all the first to hear that announcement. So go check it out. Valerie Jarrett participated in some of them. Melody Barnes, the director of the Domestic Policy Council, participated in an event. We had Phil Schillero, who is a special advisor to the president on special projects and the former head of the Office of Legislative Affairs. We had Nancy Ann DeParle, who is deputy chief of staff to the president, works right under Bill Daley. And we had John Carson, who's the director of the Office of Public Engagement. And other folks, and I'm probably forgetting, participating in the events. Of course, Jeff and I participated in many, if not all, of those events. And so we heard the stories of families that are benefiting from Medicaid and that are really being able to continue to lead productive lives because of Medicaid. And it's important for the president. He wants to hear those stories because he believes in the fact that this is helping real people every day be more productive, and it was important for him, for his senior team, who are in the room with him on a daily basis, advising him as he works on these budget negotiations, to hear these stories of Americans. So I encourage you to check out our blog. Valerie did the blog today. We had a blog last week from John Carson. It'll link you to some of the other organizations that we worked with and their stories. So check out those blogs, and you'll see how the president is standing by Medicaid and standing up for Americans across the country.
Our next question comes from Karen. She says, hello, will you please repeat the post of Rebecca's address? Great presentation. Best regards, Karen.
Rebecca is a superstar.
It's okay, I'll be like you when I'm doing a call. The best email address to send your information to is presidential, presidential, personnel, personnel, office, office, that's all one word, no spaces in between, @who.eop.gov.
And we should say also that this video will be up on disability.gov, who's hosting the town hall today. We should have mentioned disability.gov earlier. Disability.gov is hosting the town hall today, and so the video of this town hall will be up on disability.gov later today, so you can watch it as many times as you would like and make sure you get all of the information. So check out disability.gov, which is really a fantastic resource for finding out information about what's going on in the government related to people with disabilities. They cover all of the major issue areas, education, health, employment, etc. So you can go there in addition to going to the website. So disability.gov, we certainly thank them for hosting the event today and really doing all the groundwork to put this together.
And like them on Facebook.
Yes. And they did my... they did the tweeting. We just did a delegation to Athens, Greece with Dr. Biden, and we tweeted through disability.gov. And of course, I had no idea what I was doing, but they walked me through it. So,
all right, let's take another one from online live. This comes from Rose in York, Pennsylvania. She said, mental disabilities, or the invisible disability, are often ignored by the ADA. It is very difficult to prove discrimination against a person with a mental illness, but the discrimination is real and prevalent. And her question following that is, do you keep track of how many people with mental disabilities the government has hired?
Well, I think what we do is we keep track of people with disabilities that are hired. I don't actually know for sure whether we keep track of every specific segment of disability. It's obviously voluntary whether people say that they have a disability. And I know the forms do ask if people voluntarily want to state their disability. There are categories where a person can identify whether or not they have a specific type of disability. And so certainly hidden disabilities is something that we are absolutely aware of. Mr. Jeff will have something to add. Jeff does a lot of work in the mental health area, but we certainly have people with invisible disabilities who work in the federal government. We have people with invisible disabilities who have been appointed in the federal government. So it's certainly something that we are aware of and certainly are committed to continuing to work on. And Jeff, you want to say anything about mental health?
No, I mean, I think you've covered it. I mean, there's been a lot of excitement in recent years with enactment and prior to this administration of mental health parity legislation. We think that's going to help in a number of ways. But clearly we have a lot to do. There's stigma with a lot of disabilities, but there's still a lot of stigma around people with mental illness, and we need to address that. And I think that across the government, from agencies like SAMHSA, but CMS that runs Medicaid and Medicare, there's lots of different agencies that are really doing a lot of really important work to help people with all kinds of disabilities, but including people with mental illness.
Okay. Our next question comes from Beth in Parker, Colorado. Diversity leadership programs typically overlook people with disabilities, or they require a person to be at some kind of leadership level already. When people with disabilities are just struggling to get in the door, what efforts are being made to help us get to the next level past in the door?
I'll take this one. I think the president, and I know as an administration as a whole, we really want to see the federal government as the model employer for people with disabilities and see the private sector and the public sector reflect the need and the really exciting things that we're doing. One of the things that we've been very excited about is among our presidential appointees is the professional development that we've been providing. We see this as critical for all appointees. And as a person with a disability in the administration, I know how critical it is for people with disabilities. So far and to date, we have had 80% of our political appointees participate in our professional development programs that we're running here out of the White House as part of our broader connectivity that we're working on with our appointees. We see this as we'll, of course, not be satisfied till we get to 100%. And many of these folks have actually come through this academy in their first year. We see this as critical to give them the foundation that they need going forward. We're hoping we start seeing it, reflected more broadly in the private sector as well. But like I said, this president operates off of an extremely broad definition of diversity. We're finding folks from all over the country. We're actually going out and actively recruiting people at conferences. It's the first time that the Presidential Personnel Office has had a travel budget. Previous administrations didn't have one. And so we're actually going out to find people where they are, because the president is telling us on a regular basis that he wants us to reach further, reach wider, reach deeper, and find folks that haven't had a seat at the table before. and bring them here. You know, but at the same time, we understand that it's no good bringing them to the table if they don't have the skills and the support and the resources that they need to be successful in their jobs.
Great. The next one comes from Robert in New York City. The internet is always evolving. How will you ensure that people with disabilities are not left behind?
That's a good question. I am a computer user, as you might imagine, in this day and age, and certainly I use the internet. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm blind. So making sure that folks with disabilities are not left behind in the technological age is very important. And there are a number of things that we have done as an administration to address the overall technology field, including the internet. And I'll just touch on a few of those. Last year, the president signed the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, and it was really an historic moment for the president and for the disability community. It was a civil rights piece of legislation related to technology, ensuring that that folks with disabilities have access to emerging technology, whether it be 911 communications, whether it be interactive TV sets, whether it be making sure that folks who have hearing disabilities or deaf or hard of hearing have the appropriate access that they need as well for closed captioning. So it was a very important piece of legislation, and the president was proud to sign it, and we had a great event here at the White House where the president invited a couple hundred of his closest friends from the disability community from across the country to come and celebrate as he signed that piece of legislation. Another thing that we've done, the Department of Justice has been very aggressive in speaking about making sure that we look at the issue of the ADA applying to websites. And last year, the Department of Justice issued an advance notice of proposed rulemaking about this very issue. And the Civil Rights Division, Jeff and I have been working very hard with the Civil Rights Division, and the work is ongoing there. The next step is to get a notice of proposed rulemaking out about this very important issue, and we're working very hard, very closely with the Department of Justice that has been very supportive of this issue. And so we plan to make sure that people with disabilities are not left behind in the technology age. And the one other thing that I'll mention is that the FCC, in putting out its broadband plan, I think it was last year, they put out their broadband plan, and I'll just note that there were a lot of sections in there that included issues surrounding accessible technology in their plan. And Chairman Julius Janikowski has been doing a phenomenal job of including people with disabilities in the efforts of the FCC.
Our next question comes from Natalie in Eureka, Missouri. Mr. President, I would like to know if we can bridge the 2-year gap between disability approval and 24 months eligible for Medicare. I do not qualify for Medicaid, so this leaves me with no health insurance for 2 years. Thanks, Nat.
Right. So this is a long-standing challenge in Medicare that, you know, you must determine to be disabled. Then if you're under age 65, you have to wait 24 months from the point you're determined disabled to receive Medicare benefits. You know, a lot of this, the president's worked really hard on health reform. He passed the Affordable Care. That's going to greatly help that situation because it's going to ensure in 2014 that all people have access to comprehensive health insurance. Many of these people will be able to buy private insurance through exchanges. Discrimination on the basis of disability, other pre-existing conditions will be outlawed. Getting there, though, we've already outlawed discrimination. We've already taken steps to expand insurance coverage. But we've also, one of the immediate steps we've taken is launched the PCIP program, the Pre-Existing Condition Insurance Program. And this is something that provides relief to people there in every state of the country, but some people can choose to purchase insurance coverage through these PCIP programs as a way to bridge the gap until we have a more comprehensive solution in 2014.
Okay. This comes from Owen in Fallon, Nevada. What is the White House doing to encourage involvement of youth with disabilities in public policy and leadership opportunities?
You know, I think one of the first things is, and I'm going to toot OPE's horn for a minute, is the youth roundtables that I know Cal.
That's what I was going to talk about, yeah.
Have been doing. We've been actually really excited. I've heard from a number of young people actually around the country that have written me talking about their involvement in the youth roundtables. And I would encourage, you know, anybody really interested checking out whitehouse.gov/youngamericans to find out about those roundtables. Is that the right URL?
Well, I don't know the URL off the top of my head, but if you go to whitehouse.gov, you can definitely find the youth roundtables link. But I myself participated in a couple of the youth roundtables as the White House participant. One was dealing with general issues facing youth with disabilities, and there was one dealing with mental health, and it was just a listening session where we heard, and it was great to hear from young people dealing with disability issues, whether they're young people who have siblings with disabilities or young people themselves with disabilities. And they had some obviously profound thoughts about education and what needs to be done. And so getting youth with disabilities involved is certainly a part of what we're doing here. Some of the other things that we've done, we've had youth participate in grassroots events here at the White House. We're doing these community leaders briefing series now. You should check out whitehouse.gov for information on that. But in that, we're bringing in community leaders from around the country every Friday this summer. And many of those community leaders are youth. And we've had youth with disabilities be invited and will continue to be invited over the summer. And one other program that I'll mention that we just that I was really proud to be a part of was the we just had the graduation for Project Search. Which for those of you who may not know, Project Search is a program that provides opportunities for persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities to work in a setting to finish their high school education out and work in an integrated employment setting. And that's how they finish their education. And we hosted them in three agencies here, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Labor, and Department of Education. And we just hosted the graduation for these high school students where Secretary Duncan spoke and I was able to participate as well. And so looking at those young people and some of those young people who graduated from that program, we went ahead and hired right away to integrated employment here in the federal government. So it was definitely a success, and we're gonna have, I think those three agencies are gonna continue to do it next year, and I think we're gonna add one or two agencies that are gonna participate in that program, and we hope to continue growing it.
I have one thing I'd really like to add. You know, I think generationally we've seen a generational shift in the disability community. You know, I think through the development of state youth leadership forums, youth resource information and training centers, the growth of groups like People First and the disability specific groups, we've seen sort of a new generation emerge. And you know, Secretary Duncan refers to them as the ADA generation. You know, they're the generation that grow up not only with the knowledge and sort of the experience of growing up under the ADA and IDEA, but they actually have the expectation of employment.
Yeah.
They have the expectation of being homeowners. They have the expectation of not having to choose between having a family and working. You know, this is a huge generational shift in the disability community. And I think it's been so empowering and so exciting to see the young the next generation of leaders. And I hate calling them youth leaders because I find that very stigmatizing on a whole different level. But that's okay because you're young. But you know, to see this next generation of leadership come in and be engaged in policy discussions. We're actually even seeing it on the appointee level. We have some of the youngest presidential appointees in history are young people with disabilities serving at the behest of the President of the United States.
And I do consider myself a youth, so I'm a young person.
Your hair belies it.
They can't see that, I don't think.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, here's another question from a young person, and you did touch on this a little bit with Project Search, but this one comes from Josh in Seattle, Washington. What is being done to increase access that young people with disabilities have to internships? Why aren't there pathways that make it easier for people employed as federal interns to get full-time jobs?
Do you want me to take it?
Go ahead.
We've actually had some conversations with our colleagues over at the Office of Personnel Management right now, and they're actually in the process of sort of rethinking and redesigning a number of federal internship programs to make them more aligned, to make them, you know, broader in terms of their reach, and to make them make more sense, you know, to be frank. And so they're actually looking at how they can turn these programs into pipelines for employment within the federal government. You know, I think the other, you know, sort of the other challenge is in creating that expectation for employment preparing young people for what they need to know, all young people, but especially young people with disabilities, for what they need to know to be effective going into an internship. You know, and I think there are a number of technical assistance providers that are funded by the federal government that have been developing materials on this. I've seen a couple of guides come out related to like everything a young person with a disability needs to know to be effective in an internship 101. But then on the employer side, what do employers need to know in order to be effective and supportive of creating internships for students with disabilities?
And we've had a number of interns. Not only here in the White House with disabilities, but throughout the federal government. We were recently just kind of taking a poll of interns with disabilities in various agencies. And each agency came back and said, we have this many in our department, whether it's in the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitation Services or Office of Disability Employment. Chris Griffin over at OPM has some interns with disabilities. And we have consistently had interns with disabilities in every White House internship class. And so we've had folks with deaf, we've had folks who are blind, we've had folks with physical disabilities, and on and on and on. And so we're going to continue that commitment here at the White House. We know our other agencies are going to continue that, and like Becca said, they're working on reshaping the internship program for the entire federal government. And people with disabilities are absolutely going to be a part of that, because the folks over at OPM who are really leading that effort, the leadership over there, John Berry and Chris Griffin, are absolutely committed to making sure that we include folks with disabilities. And so the last thing I'll say is that the interns that we've had here, we work closely with the advocacy community and organizations. We have interns from the AAPD internship program. We have interns from WRP, the Workforce Recruitment Program. So we work closely with the disability community, as well as folks with disabilities just applying, not through any specific program or organization, just applying. So we're open for business.
You know, and the only thing I would add is I think it's also important that folks don't feel like they just have to work at a disability office.
Absolutely.
You know, if you want to work at the Center for if you want to intern at the Center for Environmental Quality or the NSC or any of the other acronyms, please apply for those offices. Okay. You know, believe me, you don't want to come work for Kareem and I. We're pretty boring. Work for Jeff. Jeff's awesome.
All right. Our next question comes from Sharon in Beaufort, Missouri. How is the new healthcare law going to affect us on Social Security disability, those who already have special problems and no money, along with state Medicaid? Will we have to start paying premiums for our insurance coverage?
So the Affordable Care Act really shouldn't produce major changes for people with disabilities that are already gaining coverage through Medicaid. Now, states already have flexibility. They can charge co-payments for current beneficiaries, but it's limited. Acknowledging their low income status. What the Affordable Care Act is doing is expanding access to Medicaid, expanding access to private insurance for all people, and create new options, but it really shouldn't change sort of in general the terms of, and how you're gaining coverage. So while a state could, under its Medicaid program, impose new cost sharing within current rules, there's nothing about the Affordable Care Act that's going to impose new premiums or cost sharing for people with disabilities currently in the program.
Okay. Our next question comes from Olga in Miami, Florida. What plans are there on the federal level to help meet housing needs for people with disabilities?
Well, you know, housing is obviously so incredibly critical. And we thank you for the question, Olga. And a couple of things that we have done in the administration. The first that I'll mention is last year, the president signed into law the Frank Melville Housing Act, and which really puts a stake in the ground about improving housing options for folks with disabilities and doing it in an integrated setting, and doing it in a setting where people with disabilities are living in the same buildings as people without disabilities, and there's no sort of segregation. And so that's one thing. The other thing that I'll mention is that we work very hard to look at this issue in working with all of our agencies, because we know that if you only focus on housing and you don't focus on health and you don't focus on civil rights, then what happens is you may have housing, but then folks are being discriminated against in other areas, or they're not getting the health benefits that they need through Medicare or Medicaid or whatever the services or the community-based services that they need. So the president launched the Year of Community Living in 2009, and even though it was called the Year of Community Living, it's ongoing. And the Department of Justice, HHS, and HUD have been working jointly very closely together. And Jeff and I talk to those folks, the leaders over there, all the time, and they're always collaborating on whether it be housing choice vouchers that Secretary Sebelius has worked very hard to release over 4,000 of those, and putting millions and millions of dollars in new health / housing initiatives. And so to work together has been critical. And then you add that with the Department of Justice's work on enforcing the Olmstead decision to make sure folks have the choice to live in the communities where they choose. And then you have a comprehensive effort overall to focus on housing along with the other areas.
You know, I would just say a couple things. One, and there was this question earlier about mental illness. So, and I'll get the actual name wrong, so I apologize, but there's a national action plan to end homelessness. You know, and if we look at the demographics of this population, there are a lot of people with disabilities who are homeless, including a lot of people with mental illness. And this is a really important strategic focus of HUD to make progress there. But the other thing is the specific programs at HUD, at Housing and Urban Development, that serve people with disabilities are pretty small pieces in their broader portfolio of housing programs. And a focus of their work there is to ensure that all their bigger programs, the Section 8 program and others, are also assisting people with disabilities in housing. And, you know, I would just like to echo what Kareem said. You know, because of the connection between health and housing and access to long-term services and housing, we can't think of a housing separate. And Department of Health and Human Services, their Office of Disability, and I think it's the Office of the Secretary at HUD, have been doing a lot of work together to really integrate these things and really make sure both federal programs work much better together.
Okay, we have about 3 minutes left, so here's our last question. What training programs are available to HR managers and recruiters so they can ease onboarding for disabled employees? This one is a live question from Sukanya.
Can you read it again?
Yes. What training programs are available to HR managers and recruiters so they can ease onboarding for disabled employees?
Ease onboarding?
Bring people on board.
Yeah. Okay.
Orientation.
Right. Well, I would say, I assume we're talking about the federal government here, and there are lots of training programs, and the place to go for that is the Office of Personnel Management's website. They have done a phenomenal job of creating some tools. There's a Schedule A training that OPM has created for HR persons hiring, and then they've also created it for the consumer, the person with a disability who is trying to get the job. And they're quick 5-minute videos that almost demystify the idea of Schedule A and hiring people with disabilities, because they make it really simple. And that's how it was designed to be, is really simple. And we've kind of done a job as a government to make it more complicated. And so those training videos are on OPM's website. They have other tools that training personnel can use on OPM's website, as well as folks can always check out disability.gov for other resources that are available. And finally, I would say the Office of Disability Employment Policy's website has created some toolkits regarding hiring people with disabilities and some other resources, so you can check out those websites. And the information is definitely there. And I know Sarah said that was the last question, but I'm going to take a little bit of a prerogative here, because I want to address one final issue and certainly give Jeff and Becca a chance to have any final comments. But there were, I don't know if maybe the most comments asked about the cost of living adjustment related to Social Security payments, and when would that go up? And I wanted to clarify as how that works. So I'll say two things about that. First of all, a couple of years ago, the president pushed for and Congress passed one-time $250 payments to Social Security recipients across the country. And millions of folks got the one-time payment of $250 a couple of years ago. And then the president supported it again last year, although it did not pass the Congress, but the president supported those one-time payments again to help out Social Security, folks receiving different Social Security payments. The second thing that I would say is that on the cost of living adjustments, it is not a presidential decision on doing the COLA adjustment, what they call COLA adjustment, cost of living adjustment. It is an automatic formula based on inflation and some other things that I'm not a mathematician, so I can't figure out, but it is an automatic formula that determines whether there is a COLA increase for Social Security. And so that automatic formula dictates each year whether there's going to be a COLA increase or not. So it's not something that the president has said, I don't want to give COLA increases. And he's worked very hard to try to figure out other avenues to provide support for those receiving Social Security payments. And so I just wanted to make sure I address that. And of course, if we can give Jeff and Becca a chance to make any closing comments they'd like to make.
Thank you, Kareem. I'll just be really quick. I mean, as we said sort of a couple of times, you know, the country's facing significant challenges, and President Obama's working really hard to get the country on a sound footing in the short term and in the long term. And it really takes all of us. The level of questions we got, you know, just shows the, a high level of engagement from the disability community. We really appreciate that. I know all three of us, you know, we work really hard to make sure that all people with disabilities and all the various groups feel that they're fully engaged in partnership with us. And I just want to thank you for that and continue educating people, as we talked about the role of Medicaid, as we go through these policy dialogues about how different programs impact and benefit people with disabilities. So I just want to thank you for all of that.
And I think my website people would tell me, I need to say again, this is going to be up on disability.gov later on today. So folks, you can forward it around, forward the link around, make sure all your friends see it, and look forward to receiving more information about what we're doing on disability. Becca?
And I just, to reiterate what my partners in crime had to say, you know, I really appreciate you guys joining us today. The unprecedented number and variety of questions we got, you know, I think it's definitely reflective of sort of the diversity of experience that folks are, you know, dealing with out in America. You know, and as we're, you know, as we're approaching the annual anniversary of the ADA, you know, I feel very excited and very comforted to think that, you know, this is probably the first administration where folks like the three of us would be sitting at the table together.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and you know, we've come a long way, but we have a heck of a long way to go. You know, and we're glad to be here working for you guys out in the country, and you know, sharing your experience and using it to inform policy on a daily basis.
All right. We thank Sarah for doing a great job with reading the questions. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.